B-Pod Studios.
It's a really good idea to be really active on Twitter. That is a one-way ticket to riches. There's no downside.
It's Toucher and Rich on Boston's home for sports. 98.5 The Sports Hub.
I heard from a guy at a cocktail party, literally. Okay, but he might know. Take it for what it's worth. It's from a player source. And this is where he would have gotten it from the player side of it. Okay, and it was a conversation at literally a outdoor socially distant cocktail party. The guy says, boy, he turned down a lot of money here. Speaking of bets, I'm like, well, what do you mean he turned down? Weren't the Red Sox like way, you know, they offered 320. He signed for 380 or asked for 400. Weren't they way under? I mean, he said, oh, no. They offered what he asked. They offered a lot more than that. And he turned it down. And I'm like, well, wait a minute. Why wouldn't the Sox let everybody know that? Because right now everyone's calling them cheapskates. And the guy said, paraphrasing, they thought it would be a worse PR hit if people knew that Betts just turned him down straight out, that it wasn't a money thing. Because then it speaks to he didn't want to be here. What makes the Red Sox look worse? They offer him everything that he got in LA and he turned him down? PR purposes, it is better to be cheap or to be, you know, labeled cheap versus no one wants to play for you.
.985 The Sports Hub. We're Toucher and Rich. That is Mike Felger. Lots of inside information getting traded around yesterday. And that is the take on Mookie Betts. I like that Felger said that it was a socially distanced cocktail party because I was ready to pounce. I was ready to go, you're in your ivory tower, going around, having a cocktail party while we're all out here. But then he saved himself.
You don't have people coming up to you, Fred, saying, because, I mean, this when he told that story, I'm like, oh, yeah. I mean, there's people, because they know we work at the radio, who come up to you and say, listen, all right, don't say where you heard this. And then they'll tell you some sort of insider information. I know somebody who works at this, blah, 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 blah. And I'm hearing that because they know that you'll probably try it, or they think that you'll put that on the air and get some play out of it.
The only thing, and I believe it was the Eckersley-Pedroia thing, was that a guy I know knew Dennis Eckersley and told me that there was the whole thing on the plane. But no, I don't, these cocktail, the idea of a cocktail party sounds nice and it sounds something very adult, but these are things that I don't do. My life isn't really like that. Like I'm not really at things anymore that there's just people kind of mingling that I don't know.
When was the last time you like even like school things, yeah. You know, like stuff where you're around the adults?
But
the
I know them all. Like I've you know? I know all those dudes. I've known them. Like it's all like sports parents that I've known forever. So,
but there's never parents from like the other team who might see you or something.
They don't come up to the team. They know better. Right. They know that I'm, you know, I'm a acerbic wit will just put them right back in their place. No.
Well, first of all, I believe that someone did tell Felger that story. He's got no reason not to make that up. But I don't believe it for a second. And the one reason is that, you know, people are forgetting everything that ownership had been indicating and saying out loud since the year before they got rid of Mookie was that they were going to be cutting payroll. As a matter of fact, they got killed. Do you remember that at the beginning of not this season, but the season before? John Henry came out and said that they needed to be under the CBT, and it's something that they've known more for a year now. Matter of fact, I have the quote. He goes, if you don't reset, there are penalties. So we've known for some time now that we needed to reset, as other clubs have done. I mean, everything. So you're telling me those were their words, yet behind the scenes, they were doing the exact opposite and preparing and offering Mookie Betts one of the biggest contracts in baseball history? I don't buy it for one second.
Yeah. No, you make a very good point. My focus on that particular story was which is worse, to be labeled as cheap or labeled as a team that teams don't want to play, that players don't want to play for.
Race.
And, well, race factors into it in this town. That's true.
Well, I mean, it's a really good, I mean, it's a good story, and it's somewhat believable if it wasn't for the Red Sox doing everything and saying everything contrary to what that guy said was going on behind the scenes.
But do you think it's better? Okay, regardless of, we'll never know if they offered the contract or not, but do you think that it's better PR-wise to hide the fact that you offered him that contract or to hide the fact that do you think it's better to say that you didn't offer him the money in order to hide the fact that he didn't want to play here, or it's better to say that you offered him the money?
It's for the Red Sox, always better to be the team that offers the most money for a player they think
is
good. Always be better. It's always more advantageous. Free agents see that. They're like, you know what? If I'm good, they're going to come across the table and offer me a lot of money.
He moved with David Price, though, and David Price didn't like it here. And if I could see the Red Sox saying this would look bad because maybe people start positioning it that black players don't want to play here and things, and it causes a whole kind of dialogue, because I guarantee you, if it came out that Mookie didn't want to play here, that people would bring up race, and then if I'm the Red Sox, that's the last thing I want flying around my franchise.
I think money talks in situations like this on more levels than one. And yeah, Mookie might not have wanted to play here, but he'd been giving kind of hints that he was going to do his best to get to free agency as far away as 3 years ago. I mean, I think there are ways you can spin this. The Red Sox have not played the PR game well at all in the last year and a half. Can we all agree on this? They've pretty much been wrong at every turn.
Well,
and they're going to be wrong again when they jack up ticket prices again in a couple of months.
They played it right in the fact that no one cares and they suck, and that they can do things and they don't get called out for it because, I mean, during a rebuild, they're the distant fourth sport.
But that's the worst thing. Apathy is worse than anything else. They prefer hatred over apathy.
I don't think
they want people to pay attention.
I don't think they prefer being labeled as an organization players don't want to play for a lot of money. I just don't think I don't know if Mookie Betts would take less money to go to the Dodgers, or if all things being equal, he'd want to play in LA. But I do see the wisdom of the Red Sox saying, all right, if it hasn't come out, first of all, maybe I don't know how it works. Like, if you offered him that kind of money, how it wouldn't get out.
Yeah, how does that not get leaked out? Yeah.
Right,
yeah,
if you're his agent, wouldn't you want that out there?
That's literally the first time I've heard anything about them offering them that kind of money was from a guy at a cocktail party with Michael Felger. I mean, of all of the insiders and how everything leaks out, and you said it best, Fred, the agent would want that out there because he would want everyone to know where the floor was when you start negotiating.
So basically, it would be a very fortunate accident if the Red Sox offered him the money and it never got out and the story never came out. So if they were trying to protect it, but yeah, if I'm an agent and if I'm Mookie, I want it out there that I'm being offered this kind of money by the Red Sox because I want my price to drive up. And also, screw the Red Sox, because if I don't want to play here, then there's obviously a reason, so screw them.
Yeah, right. If you truly don't like the Red Sox and didn't want to be here, you wouldn't mind that story being out
there. Yeah, I guess you'd want it out there. So I just, a socially distanced cocktail party. I mean, a lot of pressure on that, too, because you got to rent the tents in case it rains.
Come to think of it, this whole story speaks more about Michael Felger than it does about the story itself.
Well, first of all, he's rubbing elbows with someone who's kind of elite enough.
Yeah. Elite enough to make up a story.
No, but to know, like, for Felger to look at it as not just being some schlub, it's got to be someone of some regard. Someone at least, I mean, Felger's in that Nantucket card game with, like, no limit.
Made sure
he
all
could have been at a cocktail party with Sean McAdam. Like, so, you know what I mean?
No, I guarantee that was not the case.
They don't rub out. They don't rub out.
No.
You're making it sound like
about,
that
you're talking about Springsteen and Pearl Jam. They don't hang out together. That's not
he'd say it came from the writer.
They're from two different sides of the track.
That's exactly what I'm saying.
And the jam.
That's exactly what I'm telling you.
Yeah.
Yeah, those fans don't mix. That doesn't battle. Happen. No,
that's
no,
right.
No.
It's the Young Buck Pearl Jam baseball fans and then the old guard Springsteen baseball fans.
Felger's in like the non
Sharks, baby.
Felger's in like the non-Jewish Margate area of New Jersey. And the baseball writers are in Asbury Park.
There was a non-Jewish Margate, section of Margate.
Oh, yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah. The Jersey Shore, there's an affluent area of the Jersey Shore.
No, I mean, hey, look, you're talking to a guy who vacations in Ocean City just south of there. I'm aware of the area.
Felger's like, oh, what are they doing? Because, you know, it's like McAdam and Peter Abraham. They're walking down the street and they're just all and you just snapping.
Felger's got his salmon pants on and they're all coming out with jeans with bandanas in their pockets. Yeah.
What the hell is this?
And then they're like, hang on, you can't be not a welcome here. This is our territory, bitches.
Exactly what's happening here.
It's like an old one. He's like Young Bucks.
Yeah, he's like, you ever take your shirt off at a Springsteen show? I don't think so. Pearl Jam moves me.
His
swimming buddy that was an Olympian comes out with his shirt off.
Yeah.
And they're bopping down the road, and here comes McAdam had a tweet that was like, like the writers, I guess, really liked that the playoffs are in the World Series is in this bubble, so they don't have to make the trip. Mm-hmm. And some writer had tweeted out like, you know, hey, this is really nice. I get to go home and go to bed. And McAdam was like, yeah, 2018 World Series. I slept in my car at the airport before the 6:30 flight.
Who's in the Pearl Jam posse?
Well, Jay Stu is one.
Well, yeah, I'm talking about like the writers.
Oh,
though,
it's I
like
don't
the,
know.
The young baseball writer. I'm sure Jeff Passan's coming out there. You know, he's snapping around. You got Passan. You probably got Gaspers in there as well in the Pearl Jam posse. Tomasi's in the posse.
No, Tomasi Springsteen.
Tomasi's into like death metal where you can cover your ugly, stupid face, that piece of garbage piece of. I almost swore.
Yeah,
oh, not Tomasi. Oh, I thought you meant. Not Tomasi.
That's all right. I mean,
not Tomasi. I thought you meant. What was the guy, the real ugly guy with the beard? He lost a bunch of weight. He's got a big, stupid head. I hate him. He just started taking shots at me for no reason when I said the Eckersley thing.
Who is that?
Rob Manfred.
Oh, Rob Bradford.
Oh,
Rob Bradford.
Oh,
okay. Bradford.
Okay.
So, yeah, I don't really know.
Tomasi, like, wow, all right.
No, Tomasi's fine.
Rod Bradford's into, like, you know.
Yeah, anything you can cover your dumb face, you failure.
Rod Bradford carrying a giant snake. It's the food. He's got the Fred Toucher, like, pincushion doll.
Oh, God, he was just the worst. I remember where I was. I had said the thing about Eckersley, whether it's true or not, whatever, it's what I heard. And my son was trying out for a travel team at Newton North, and I was sitting there, and he was like blasting me on Twitter, and I'm like, "You're ugly," and he's like, "No, you're." I actually thought about this the other day. He's like, "No, you're ugly," and I'm like, "Dude, oh come on, like you're calling me ugly? Come on, dude, you're way uglier than me, and I don't care if you weigh 5 pounds, you ugly piece of garbage. You got to be a certain kind of look at you, ugly prick." I don't even know what you do for a living now.
Steen Squad, back me up. McAdam, where are you?
Yeah, they don't like
nap time.
They don't like him. They don't like that guy.
Here they go. Snapping down the street.
They're waiting on a sunny day, baby.
That's garbage.
Yeah. I told Rich, I said earlier when you weren't on, that I was, one time my family went to the Four Seasons, like around the holidays, like to have dinner and soak up the common. And who was there but Felger and his bride? So mm-hmm. I got a feeling that there are Four Seasons and their cocktail party in it. Oh, yeah, we got a break. Doc Emmerich's coming on in just a moment.
Oh, yeah.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
Patriots head coach Bill Belichick.
Bill Belichick,
sits down with Zoe for his exclusive game day interview all season long.
You know, we've learned this year that there's going to be situations like that.
Now, back to Toucher and Rich on Boston's Home for Sports. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Despite that adversity, they followed their coach to the high road. And the high road is the road to the cup. No icing. For the first time in 39 years, the Boston Bruins have won the Stanley Cup. And they pour on to celebrate with Tim Thomas, their heroic goaltender.
98.5, the Sports Hub. That, of course, the voice of Doc Emmerich. He's got a book.
Keenly timed with his retirement. By the way, can we play longer promos here? just the man's on the line and playing an effing 8-hour promo. The name of the book is Off Mike, How a Kid from Basketball-Crazed Indiana Became America's NHL Voice. The foreword is by Eddie Olchick, and everyone loves Doc Emmerich. And Doc Emmerich, Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline, thank you so much for joining us, sir.
Hey, it's good to talk to you guys. After hearing that promo, maybe I should say something about the Patriots.
No, they had 5 minutes of it in that stupid promo. Now, don't get me started,
Doc. You can't win every game.
Well, that's right. Well, yeah, they somehow found something negative about the Patriots to play.
It's good to talk to you guys.
Yes, because you have to showcase that. Like, hey, guys, at one point we said something negative. Now, don't get me started here, but are you in suburban Detroit?
Yeah, actually about 40 miles from there. There's deer, there are deer and cows between where I am.
I know where you are.
Fewer every year, but no.
I know where you are. I'm from Farmington Hills, my friend, so don't...
Oh, you are? Okay, yeah. St. Clair is a town of about 5,000 near Port Huron, so every morning I can see Canada if it's not too foggy and the freighters aren't in the way.
My friend coaches baseball at a high school right there. All right, you, Doc Emmerich, have retired, and I have to say, I didn't expect such negativity coming out around it. I mean, people do not remember you fondly. No, but I mean, Jesus, there was. So I'm watching the Fox NFL Fox. What's Strahan? CBS. They're talking about you on the NFL pregames. I mean, people not affiliated with hockey, obviously, we're going to talk about it, but people, I mean, NFL pregames, all these things, I mean, it had to be a bit overwhelming. You couldn't have expected all of that, could you?
No, it has been overwhelming, and it's been very kind. And I'll tell you there have been some emails and some text messages, and the one that impressed me the most was one of the first that I got, and it was from Robert G. Orr. And he's my favorite player living today. Second favorite player was Gordie Howe, and of course he passed in 2017. And so that meant a lot to me, and there have been a lot of others that have meant a lot too. So it's been an awesome time, and I felt very humbled by it. And it's just I don't have words for that. I just don't.
Well, Bobby,
how much time
is
did you have with Bobby Orr? I mean, because that's he's covering this team for so long. He's such a good dude.
He kind of epitomizes hockey and why it's got it. Because I want to talk about you coming up in it, but yeah, Bobby is just a fantastic human being. He's someone who remembers you and someone who it's not surprising he would do something like that. But you.
Nope. It's not surprising he would be one of the first, too.
Yeah,
in any situation, he's probably done it for 10,000 other people.
Yeah, it's not so special.
The way he is.
Yeah, it really isn't special if you think about it. No, but, okay, so you coming up, because people have to remember how unglamorous hockey is. People remember Doc Emmerich as being this, huge national voice in all these Olympics. And believe me, the way you had to cover these Olympics is not glamorous either. But, hearing these people talk about your career and even seeing pictures of you lugging this crap around at these rinky-dink rinks, how do you even get into this business in the 70s? And I know you tried for the Penguins job. And to kind of talk about what it was like aspiring to be a broadcaster in hockey at that point.
Actually, it was just great because you got in free, even at that level, making $160 a week. But yeah, my first lavalier microphone in the IHL was was a mic that was probably about 2 inches long and a long cord on it, and they made the lavalier out of a bent coat hanger. And the coat hanger hung around my neck, and then the lavalier, the little microphone, dropped in it. But that left my hands free so that I could keep my scorecard and do all of that. But yeah, there were some rinks that were kind of dangerous for a guy 5'7" to go into. One of them was in Toledo, where they'd throw stuff at you in the booth. And back at that time, you could empty the benches, and that happened quite a bit. And the fans sort of got involved in it too. And in one of the arenas, the security guy behind our players' bench in Port Huron, we were in one of the arenas, and the coach, of course, Riley, asked, "Do you have any trouble with security here?" And the guy said, "You know, there's a guy in the last row, and he's slingshotting bullets down here at the bench. We know he's doing it, but we got to catch him at it first so we can eject him." I'm like, my goodness. But that's what it was like back then. Yeah, I began by just recording games to myself, an audience of one, sitting in the corner of our rink in Fort Wayne, where the Comets played and still play to this day, and where the Pistons were playing at that time, too, before they moved to Detroit. And then just sent those tapes away and got rejection letters one after the other, and eventually, after about 12 years of that, a team here near where I live now, in Port Huron, said yes. And so that was my first job 47 years ago. And I've been getting in free to games ever since. And it's just been great. But yeah, there were some long bus rides, and that's really where I learned the game. The players and coaches, riding on those buses taught me the sport. And the games were very unpredictable then, because now, you know, if the puck's behind the net and the defenseman has it and he's going to pass it to the right side for a breakout play, chances are in the NHL it's going to work. But in the minors, you got a lot of turnovers and a lot of mistakes, and so you had to be ready for those. But there's a lot more predictable about the NHL game in comparison.
Well, Doc, I can't think of a tougher sport to do play-by-play of. We've talked about this on our show before, and you somehow have been able to figure out about 5 billion different words for the word pass. I know that somebody came out with a list of all of the different ways that you've said passes the puck, or how many words do you think that you have? How many different ways can you say someone passes the puck?
Well, somebody with not a whole lot to do in life, I guess I counted them up once, and I'm not criticizing them for that, but it's not conspiratorial on my part. That's just the way I talk. You know, the dogs don't understand me, but, you know, hopefully people do, because a guy in Dayton, Ohio, when I was in grad school, and I used to go to every game I could, and I would talk to anybody in the press box that would talk to me. And the broadcaster for Dayton, Lyle Stieg, who later did 1 year at the Washington Capitals, said, if you can come up with different ways to say the same thing, because so much of sports is repetitive. You know, if you say dumped in from center ice, every time it's dumped in from center ice, you'll drive people nuts. So try to come up with different ways of saying it. So I didn't write them out or anything, but I just tried to vary my way of describing things. And then after the raw number of years, you arrive at different ways of saying things, and you just try to not repeat them in every game. That's all.
All right. Go ahead. So in the end, like, what made you decide that this was it, that this was the right time to retire?
It was somewhere around the end of the second round or beginning of the third round of this year's playoffs. The launch date on the book was determined 6 months ago, and I did not really have any intention of retiring by that point. But older people than I, and there still are a few of them in the world, had, you know, when you sit around with older people that are retired, they always ask you when you're going to retire. And it's kind of a sensitive question, because when you're not really ready, you just say, well, I like the job that I'm doing, and I still get paid, and I like getting in free. And then they just have this knowing look on their faces, and they say, well, you'll know when the time comes. And it was sometime during these playoffs when NBC had taken such great care of me, allowing me to do the entire playoffs from my home through fiber optics and everything else I don't understand. You know the delay that often occurs when you're dealing with satellite transmission. Oftentimes it can be over a second between what is being spoken and what you are seeing in terms of video, but they close that gap down to a fraction of a second, like 2 frames out of 24, so that it wasn't even noticeable. And so I was able to continue doing games from home, and they protected me because I am an older person and I do have cancer in my background. And so I was more vulnerable to the dangers of COVID than most of the people on their staff. But it was sometime during that time that, that it just crystallized in my mind that, you know, this is the right time. And I rounded it off to 60 years since I'd seen my first game and 50 since I first covered an NHL game as a beat reporter in Pittsburgh, and 40 of doing NHL games. And there were a lot of zeros there, a lot more than even that I had in grade seven, some of the papers I turned in to my teachers. But it seemed like it just seemed like the right time. My wife and I are healthy, and we have this menagerie of dogs and horses that we enjoy, and it seemed like the time to just do other things. NBC is going to allow me to do some video essays, so I still get my team jersey every year.
Yeah, there you go. Okay, Doc, because I don't know you, but I am a huge fan, and I've been reading about you, and I was familiar about your career and you know how difficult it is to come out. I contend that this is in your blood. I contend that, you know, maybe not the NBC gigs and things like that, but I picture you walking into, much like you did as a youth, I picture you like in Medicine Hat, Canada, like walking into some minor league booth and taking a microphone for a game. It does, it seems to me that this would be something that's in your blood, not giving up so easily, not maybe the everyday rigmarole, but this is something you will do again. You will call a game again.
I kind of doubt it.
Oh.
I don't have any inkling toward doing that whatsoever. Because you know what? I've been putting dates on a calendar that involve me traveling and getting up at 4 a.m. to make the trip to go to the morning skates, which I enjoyed. But as you get older, you get beat up a little bit more with that kind of a travel schedule. And I don't anticipate having that kind of a yen to do play-by-play that badly that at this phase of my life that I would want to do it. I would sure enjoy watching other people do it. And I do, the one thing that I do like a lot about the sport are the people that, you know, I was somewhat alluding to earlier. But I don't sense that I've got the yen to be one of those guys that makes another comeback at all.
I know you got to go, and the book is off mic. Doc Emmerich, obviously full of great stories because you were there during the times. And just how much has the game changed, and how much do you see it evolve, you know, from those days with bullets and people whizzing bullets at the visiting team's bench? And, you know, it just is some of that still alive in hockey? Is some of that charm going to be with it forever? Because I would hope so.
Yeah, I think so. I think spontaneous fighting is going to be around for a long time. It's going to be in the rule book for a long time because it can still once in a while change the course of a game. And I think it still is a sport that requires courage. It's a different kind of courage for a lot of players than it used to be, because before, in the era in the old Boston Garden and in the 70s, the courage was to survive the game. And now it's not necessarily that, because we don't have that much in the way of fighting, but we sure do have some danger out there in collisions and in blocking shots and in everything else. But no, I don't put one era against another. I just embrace the fact that I was healthy enough to get through both eras of all the rough and tumble, and now the high speed and big guys that are 2 inches or 3 inches taller by average and 20 pounds heavier than they were in the 1970s.
All right. Well, Doc Emmerich, it's a shame we got to let you go. But if you love the stories and you love the game, Doc Emmerich, the name of the book is Off Mic. And we appreciate it so much, you coming on. And have fun in retirement. Enjoy Port Huron. And thank you so much for the time.
Thank you so much. Go Patriots.
All right. Thank you. I appreciate it. There you go. Thank you so much for the time. All right. There you go. Doc Emmerich. There you have it. He's great. We'll be right back. Here are the headlines.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. text Jason to 45911, and we'll send the link straight to your phone.